Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Dr. Santina Wheat, always nice to talk to you. So let's start off with, without getting into politics at all, without getting into controversy at all, the Tylenol story has dominated this weekend. I will only ask you this. Is there a danger in misusing or overusing acetaminophen, Tylenol?
There always is a danger in overusing anything. However, Tylenol in the safe limits, so generally that's less than 4 grams of Tylenol a day, which is actually quite a lot for the typical person.
How many tablets would that be?
Oh, gosh. So I think that like you can either get, there's some that are 500 and there's some that are 325 milligrams.
Yeah.
So even the 500s, you would need to take it like at least 8 of them a day to hit the unsafe limit.
That's a lot of pills to be taken.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
And so the controversy was about pregnant women taking acetaminophen. Let's just talk about, you know, the average person. Is it safe for the average person to use Tylenol?
It absolutely is. And for some people, they don't really have another option. As long as you are not taking it with alcohol, it is a good option if you have minor pains. Typically, we use it for things like headaches or joint pains that are on the lower side. And then when you have a fever, and if the fever is making you feel bad, then the acetaminophen can help make you not feel quite so bad from that fever. So for the typical person, over about 6 months of age, it is fairly safe.
Yeah. My doctor, for example, encouraged me to use it when I have aches and pains, as opposed to actual aspirin or other pain relievers, which also have dangers, I guess, if overused, right?
That's absolutely right. We worry about things like aspirin and ibuprofen and other things that are in a group of medications called NSAIDs, because they can impact your stomach, they can impact your kidneys. And so, as I said at the beginning, anything in moderation is usually better. If you take too much of anything, it can have side effects.
I mean, I have high blood pressure.
People,
I have high blood pressure.
Like you,
and you can't take ibuprofen, right? You have to take acetaminophen if you have high blood pressure. Yeah.
Right. And part of that is the impact to the kidneys. And we also know that it can actually increase your blood pressure. And so acetaminophen is the preferred option.
Yeah. So, you know, so there's that. And I guess, you know, the bottom line of this whole thing is check with your physician, because your own body, your own metabolism, your own health condition will dictate what's best for you. Right.
I mean, that's absolutely
that
right.
Seems to make the most sense. All right.
That's absolutely right.
Let's move on. We are in flu shot season. Every time I'm at the grocery store, I think, oh, I should get my flu shot while I'm here. As I've said many times, come for the coleslaw, stay for the flu shot. Are we dead into the season now where people should be considering and doing this?
I do think it's that time. It typically takes about 2 weeks for the flu shot to be effective. And so if you are somebody that's going to be around people at all this cold and flu season, now is about the time that I recommend getting it, because I think about it before we're getting into October. So we are right at that time. My family has already gotten their flu shots. I'm absolutely encouraging it for all of my patients. I really just want to prevent the bad flus that we can see, particularly when you're not vaccinated.
So what should we be doing right now? We talk about probably vaccinations more often than any other topic on this segment every week. But it's what we get the most questions about every week as well. Should I be, you know, doing this? Should I be taking that? I had my COVID shot at such and such a date. When am I due for that? So right now, if someone wants to be up to date on their vaccinations, flu shot would be on that list. What else?
COVID shot is also on that list. There's a new one for this season. And so I would recommend that, obviously, in consultation with your physician. And then depending on your age, some people, we recommend the RSV vaccine if they haven't gotten it. And then people over 50, we also recommend the pneumonia vaccine.
Okay. All right.
Well, there's a fair number.
Is there a way to get these vaccines without having your arm sore afterwards? Honestly,
I wish. I don't know
been,
if that was.
That's been, I haven't gotten my flu shot yet because I was like, I don't want my arm to be sore.
Yes, I'm of the belief that I'd rather get them all at the same time and be sore one day, but that's me.
And just get it all over with at one time?
Yep.
One arm?
That is my plan, yep.
You put it all in one arm, too? Because I thought, do I spread this out? Do I put some in one arm and one in the other?
It's generally my preference to do one arm so that I can use my writing hand without problems, but everybody is a little bit different.
Okay, all right. I'm still going to procrastinate while I'm going to buy my coleslaw. I'll tell you that right now. We'll be back with more with Dr. Santina Wheat. And let's get to some of your questions as well. You can text in 312-981-7200. Or if you want to actually speak like a human being with your voice, 312-981-7200. Dean, I get both of my vaccinations in my dominant arm because I'm forced to use it. I always advise my patients to do the same thing when I was practicing as a nurse practitioner. If it's in your dominant arm and you're using that arm, does the soreness go away faster?
It depends on the person. Again, it might. It forces everything to move around. When that happens to me, I just become lazy then and then don't want to use my arm.
Yeah,
so it's really up to you.
Yeah, I would be the same way. I'd have a full cast on if it was me. That's just me being a baby. Faye, you're on WGN with Dr. Wheat.
Yeah, hi. I'm adding to that, you're the texter who said, because I always use my non-dominant arm, my left arm, and then only recently did a nurse say, oh no, you should do it in your dominant arm because, like she said, you know, it'll force you to use it. I sit at a computer all day, and it was life changing. I didn't feel any discomfort in that arm from then on. So for me, that worked. So
that's just great.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Just wanted to add that.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. The 248 area code says, is there still a COVID vaccine available that is not mRNA? Well, first, you have to explain what that means because I have no idea what mRNA is.
Right. So there were different types of vaccines that were being made when the COVID vaccine was developed. The ones that are available typically at the pharmacies were the type of mRNA. It's just sort of how it was developed. There were some people that were concerned about that technology. I do believe there are still COVID vaccines that are not mRNA vaccines. However, they're not quite as easy to find. And most of the health systems that I'm aware of are holding the mRNA ones as well as the pharmacies.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's harder to find.
You know, whatever the topic on this segment, it all comes down to the vaccines. That's what people have so many questions about this. I'm sure you must see that in your clinic as well. Dr. Santina Wheat, always nice to talk to you. I hope you have a wonderful Sunday today. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Have a great week.